Hey guys, what's up? It's Greg Srivasti. Another installment of Find Your Film. Two interviews for you this time. First up is Sophie Nalisse. You might know her from movies like The Kid Detective, way back in the day, Monsieur Lazare. Recently, she's been in Yellow Jackets. I think that's probably her most popular piece of work on her resume. She also mentioned in the interview a movie she did called Mean Dreams, a film I really, really loved. And now she's starring in Irena's Vow. It's in theaters April 15th and 16th via Fathom Events. I will have links to where this movie will be playing at. So this is sort of a midnight podcast release. So hopefully you guys listening to it out there, wherever you are, hopefully stateside. Well, that was me bumping my table. And just go to the link to see if Irena's Vow is playing in your neck of the woods. Really enjoyed her performance in this film. She plays, it's a true story of Irena Gut, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, Opdyk, O-P-D-Y-K-E. Again, Irena Gut Opdyk. So I apologize for the pronunciation. Based on a true story. And so she was a Polish nurse who during World War II, or the outbreak of World War II, she helped rescue Jewish workers within her employ, within her sort of environment. And what she was doing is she was risking her own life for these workers. And the movie centers on what she did to actually, and this is not a big spoiler because it's in the plot synopsis. She takes them to the home. It's a very big home of the commandant. And the commandant is played by Dougray Scott. Really well acted film. It's written by Dan Gordon, directed by Louise Archambault, and I really enjoyed this film. Nalisse was excellent in the film as just this very, very determined young woman, basically a teenager, and she was wise beyond her years and brave beyond her years to do what she did. The movie's very, very tense, and just the production design, the acting overall, really, and it's one of those things where some movies you might think, oh, it's a boring history lesson. This movie, the way it's shot, there are moments of tension and her interplay with Dougray Scott, as well as the Jewish workers she hides in the home. Really well done characterizations and well-written story, again, by veteran screenwriter Dan Gordon. That is the first interview. Second interview, again, Irena's Vow, only in theaters April 15th and 16th via Fathom Events, stateside. Hopefully down the line, there will be more ways to see Irena's Vow. And I still haven't seen Yellow Jackets. Listeners, if you have seen this series, please tell me if this is a great series, which I think it's streaming on Paramount Plus. Tell me if this is a great series to watch. So that's the first interview, Sophie Nalisse for Irena's Vow. Number two, second interview, is this very interesting filmmaker, Luis Javier Henin. And I don't even, again, mispronunciation, H-E-N-A-I-N-E, Luis Javier Henin. He is the director and co-writer of Disappear Completely. It's a Mexican film. The Mexican title is Desaparecer por Completo. And it's a mystery thriller centering on this tabloid crime photographer played by Harold Torres. Starts off with him photographing a crime scene, and you see him getting close to the cadaver of a woman. I think there's a bar on top of her, and she looks, it's a grisly scene, and he's just snapping away. And from the first several seconds, you understand that this photographer, Santiago, again played by Harold Torres, he does not quiver at the sight of blood or the sight of a dead body. He is focused on getting the perfect shot, no matter what the cost. And we eventually learn that Santiago is very career-driven, even though he has a longtime girlfriend and she wants them to take their relationship to another level. And unfortunately, he is so one-track-minded, he will do whatever it takes to become the best at his business. He wants to actually open up his own photography gallery, all that stuff. The catch is, though, there might be a supernatural occurrence that happens in one of his missions. When he goes out one night, he tries to shoot a dead body, and something happens. And something, it may be supernatural, may not be. And ultimately, it affects Santiago's life. The plot line, the moniker is disappear completely. So what happens is, one by one, his senses, touch, sight, smell, he starts to lose facility of the senses as the narrative progresses. Again, that is not a spoiler, but because that's sort of the framework behind Disappear Completely. For our Patreon members, for Cinematics Patreon members, I have Luis Javier Henin talking for almost 10 minutes, around 9 minutes, about the awesome ending of Disappear Completely. This movie, it's 106 minutes. The way he frames the final 5 minutes of the movie may actually make you love this movie even more. So it's a slow burn thriller. Harold Torres is a fantastic actor. Saw him maybe two and a half years ago in this Prime Video. I think it's still streaming on Prime Video. This limited series called 000, and he played one of the mercenaries who worked for a drug lord in 000, and he was so intense in that movie. I mentioned that series to Luis Javier Henin during the interview, and he mentioned, yes, when he saw 000, he said, yeah, Harold Torres is the guy for Desaparecer por Completo, aka Disappear Completely. So it's really cool. I can't wait to see Harold Torres in more movies, and he's very intense and locked in for this role. Again, the ending of this movie, as Eric Holmes would say, it's a banger. Really loved the ending of Disappear Completely. Love the tone, love the pacing. And so the only prohibitive thing is you might want a little bit more action in the movie, but if you are in the right mind frame, very contemplative mind frame, and you don't mind sort of that slow burn aesthetic, this movie should be perfect for you. Disappear Completely is currently streaming on Netflix. Okay, so if you're not able to see Irena's Vow, which I really enjoyed on the 15th and 16th, go to Netflix and try give Disappear Completely a shot. Now, this is Find Your Film, all right? We talk about not just the movies that of the actors and directors I'm interviewing, but they also talk about movies they love. So for Luis Javier Henin, he talks about in the interview his love for the films Halloween and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is a confession. I have not seen either film. I'm 52 years old. The reason why is as a child, I saw the trailer to these movies when I was maybe 7 or 8. I think maybe even 8 or 9. And I was, yeah, it really shook me up. And I sound like a coward, but for some reason, I think back of how scared I was as a kid the first time I saw a trailer or scenes from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Halloween, that over the years, I have never given either movie a shot, even though I know both of these are among not just horror aficionados, but cinephiles. There, it's right up on best of lists. So eventually I have to go see these movies. These are two of Luis Javier Henin's favorite films. For Sophie Nolisse, she mentions the movie Prisoners from Denis Villeneuve, and also the Lasse Hallström film, What's Eating Gilbert Grape. So Halloween, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from Luis Javier Henin, and Prisoners and What's Eating Gilbert Grape from Sophie Nolisse. Tell me what you think. Are any of these movies on your top list as well as favorite movies? Finally, here's the thing. I've been so busy covering movies. There are a couple of Blu-rays I'm giving away. And it's a movie called Monster, the latest from Kore-eda. Kore-eda, you might know him from the director behind Afterlife. And he's a very celebrated filmmaker. Here's the thing. Monster is received great reviews from Rotten Tomatoes. And I still have yet to see it, and I missed publicizing it on its Blu-ray release date, which it came out about a week ago. Monster, it's a drama mystery, rated PG-13. Oh, that's interesting. It's rated PG-13. I thought it would be rated R or something, but right now on Rotten Tomatoes, Monster has a rating of 97% from the critics and 92% from the audience. So this is one of... Here, let me look at the... Hold on 1 second. I'm going to look at the plot line behind it, and I'm going to tell you what it's about. When her young son Minato starts to behave strangely, his mother feels that there is something wrong. Discovering that a teacher is responsible, she storms into the school, demanding to know what's going on. But as the story unfolds through the eyes of the mother, teacher, and child, the truth gradually emerges. Okay, so that's, again, thank you to Wellgo USA Entertainment for supplying me the two Blu-rays for this movie from Hirokazu Koreeda, and it's 126 minutes. This giveaway will end on Monday, April 22nd, 2024. I will actually put the giveaway details on the show notes, all right? So a lot of stuff for this episode. Interview with Sophie Nelise first, then the interview with Luis Javier Henin, and then the giveaway. Go on to the show notes to enter the giveaway. Hopefully, one of you listeners will receive a Blu-ray copy of Monster, courtesy of Wellgo USA Entertainment. I'm done babbling. Thanks for supporting me here over at Find Your Film podcast. And yeah, apologies for, I've been gone for a couple months from this podcast feed. I will be back, hopefully, not just periodically, but on a more, I think, weekly basis. All right. So in 3, 2, 1, here is Sophie Nelise. How are you, Sophie?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I'm here with Sophie Nelise for Irena's Vow. I don't know, how do you pronounce it? Is it Irena's Vow, Irina, or Irena's Vow?
I think it's Irena for English, and I would say Irena, but again, yeah. That's, I mean, Irena's great.
So, look, you've been getting asked this question a lot, but as far as literature and research for this real-life person and the actual event, did you have a lot of stuff to work on as far as building your character and building the narrative as well? Did you have a lot of research to go on?
Yeah, obviously this is based on a real life woman. So I definitely wanted to give a very accurate representation of who she was. I was able to find a lot of documentation. There's archives about her in her 60s doing interviews. And I only found photos of her in her 20s. Obviously there are no interviews. And then there's this autobiography that I read, and I spoke to one of her great friends who's still alive, whose name is Dan Gordon. I mean, he told me a little bit about how she was as a person and how full of light she was and kind of how they met. And then I had to work with a dialect coach to nail down the Polish accent.
Is it movie magic? Because a lot of the narrative is set in the house. It's a really interesting house. Were there different interior shots, or was everything in that really confined but very big space? Can you just talk about all of those elements?
It was actually all in this huge villa that was, it was a location that was about an hour out of Poland, in Poland still, but like out of the city center. And it was built years ago, and there's just like, it's so grand and so impressive when you step in. And I mean, you could tell by like the walls and the painting that's kind of like shriveled, and that there's like this essence and in this realness to the building. And it's abandoned now, but it has all these like multiple rooms. And yeah, so we shot everything in there apart from the cellar, which was like actually like built, like the actual little room was built. But that was crazy because they would like, so there would be no daylight. They would like lock us in there. They would like shut the door, and we'd kind of be like, a lot of the actors got really claustrophobic because it's pretty tight. And there was all this like dust and dirt. And we would like have so much dirt up our, like when I would blow my nose, it was disgusting. And it added to that sense of like, we felt so cramped that it felt very real. And yeah, just being able to shoot in Poland was such a treat because the city holds so much history and so much depth to it that I felt very lucky to be able to use that to get into character.
Did you have time to actually explore and the location and have free time to yourself? Because this is a very intense movie, and I'm assuming that, I don't know how long the shoot days were. Was it all about you were staying at a place and then going to work and then going back home? Or were you able to actually breathe a little bit and explore?
It was definitely a very crazy shoot. We would work crazy hours, and I would get back to my hotel at like midnight and be back on set by 6 the next morning. It was crazy, but I had my weekends at least. I will have to say I was pretty tired on my weekends. It was really nice though, because I had my mom who was there with me, And she's just my like biggest emotional support, and she's like my best friend, and it's so nice to have someone that is around you and that brings you that support, but without you feeling the need to like, it's not as if I have a friend that I need to like entertain. So on weekends, we would just like walk around the city a lot. We wanted to go to one of the concentration camps, but there were no tickets available. And also that would have been a little depressing on the weekend when I have 2 days off to go back in that space. But we did a few road trips. My mom and I like to do that. We like we'll rent a car and we'll like go on a road trip for a weekend. So we did that, which was very helpful to kind of like put work behind me, at least for the weekend.
I was checking out some of your interviews for this movie, and Dougray Scott, you have some great scenes with. He was talking about in between takes, you'd always roast him. And I thought that was very interesting because then you added that it's very easy for you to get in and out of character. So my question to you is, roasting and just having a good time with your fellow cast and crew, is that a big part of why you enjoy the filming process? And then where did you find that facility to actually go in and out as opposed to being in method throughout the entire production? Is that a talent you easily picked up, or was that just innate in you already?
On the contrary, I wish I was more method because I feel like I would be a better actor if I was. Because I don't ever feel like I become a character. I've never had that feeling. Like it's a very actor thing to be like I become someone, and I've never had that feeling. I don't know what that would feel like. But so I guess I just do the scene how I think it should be done, and then they call cut, and I'm like, I'm like myself again. So it's just who I am. And yes, I mean, this one specifically does hold a little bit more weight when I come home. But usually, yeah, any crying scene, as soon as like the scene is over, I'm playful and bubbly again. And especially with this, it does get so heavy that I think it is important to keep somewhat of a light atmosphere on set. And I'm a very, I think that's what I love about my job is that it doesn't feel like a job when you're on set. It's like a playground and you get to like have fun with other actors, and it's like you're at work but you're like pranking each other and you're going behind the monitor and you're pranking the director, and it just feels like day camp. That's how I see it at least. And so yeah, I definitely would laugh a lot with Louise the director and Dougray, which he was a little more method, and I think maybe sometimes he wasn't so focused because I was next to him pulling faces. But yeah, we had a lot of fun.
You know, on that day camp, the element, I remember over a decade ago, you started a movie that I need to rewatch, but I remember at the time I really loved Monsieur Lazare, I believe.
Yeah.
I just wonder if such quality projects like that, when you were much younger, did they help influence you on the path you are today as an actor? Or am I overshooting that theory? Because I would assume being a part of something so special inspired you to go to where you are today and continue that acting path.
Yeah, I think I've been extremely lucky with the projects that I've been offered and that I've gotten. I was very lucky to start with Monsieur Lazare that got such a wide success, and it definitely put me on the map for more indie things and opened the doors to like the United States. And so I've definitely been offered very interesting projects along the way, and I think I also try to choose them as wisely as possible. But at the end of the day, I think I'm just, yeah, I just love trying new things and I love experimenting, and I want to have a career that's as diversified as possible. And I would like to try some comedy and rom-coms or like action movie because I have a background of gymnastics. I love anything that's it requires some sort of physicalness to it. And I love doing stunts, and so yes, I definitely think it's like set the bar high for like the quality and the level of projects that I choose. And because I've had the chance to work with like such amazing directors that they all set the bar so high that whenever I choose a project, I'm definitely very aware of who I'm working with. But yeah, I think it's a mixture of a lot of different components when I decide to take a project on.
You know, final couple of questions. First off, I apologize for not ever seeing Yellow Jackets. It's so critically acclaimed. So the rote question is, when is season three coming around? And what do people like me who haven't seen it, what are we missing from this entire world that you are a part of?
Oh, so we're going back to shoot season 3 in a month, which I'm very excited for. And so it should be released, I would think, beginning of 2025, I'm guessing. And it's a really thrilling show. It's so fun. I think it has so many nuances. I think it goes through horror and like psychological thriller, but as well, it has some very like comedic beats to it. It's a very dark kind of humor, but I think it's just really fun because we get to explore these women in a light that we've never seen them before. And I think a lot of roles that are for females are very one note or they're not very nuanced. And I think in this we see them at their best and at their worst, and we see women do things that we've never really seen them do on TV before, and they fight each other, and it's just, it feels so raw and real and grounded, and it's such an honest show, but brings you on like such a roller coaster of emotions. And yeah, I think it's just a really fun show to watch.
The final question is a two-parter. The first part of this question is, can you name one of your all-time favorite films? And what is it about this specific movie that still resonates with you? And the second part of that question is, from your own body of work, can you name a movie or TV series project that you've been part of that you would like our listeners to watch and that you feel is underrated? And thank you for your time.
Wow, that I have so many favorite films. I do love, it's so hard. I love What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I think DiCaprio's performance in it is, to have done that at such a young age, I literally have no words. I think is, I can't understand it. I don't know where he gets it from. But one that I actually watch more than once is Prisoners. I'm such a fan of Denis Villeneuve. He's from Montreal. He's the sweetest man, and I think all the actors in it are so great. And I think I love that movie because every time I watch it back, I pick up on different details. And I love an ending where it's up to the audience to kind of decide where they stand. And I think that the finale of that movie, I to this day, it's up to you to decide what you want to believe will happen. And so I love that. Also, it's like my biggest fear to be kidnapped. It's like my biggest fear ever. So it's a very triggering movie for me as well. And then what was it? My favorite performance, my favorite
Oh,
movie that I've done.
or just a movie that you feel is underrated from your resume that you would like our listeners to watch. So.
There's this movie that I did called Mean Dreams that went to Cannes a few years back, but I think it's really beautiful. It's like a coming of age between two teenagers that fall in love, and I play the girl of Cassie, I think. Can't remember, but her father is abusive and an alcoholic, and the boy that she falls in love with tries to save her, and it's just a beautiful story. And it's again a bit of a thriller, and they kind of like run away together, but they're being chased down by the dad. But it's just such a honest and pure kind of love that they have for each other. And
I've seen that movie. I remember it. It is
that's
so
good.
it that I remember actually reviewing it, and I feel that that's such an underrated film.
Yeah, it's a good one. I don't know why I didn't. Yeah.
Have you had over the years people who love your work, have they approached you about that movie? Because that's such a real great film, actually.
Yeah, not really. And it's surprising because, like I said, it went to Cannes. I mean, it went to like the, I don't know how you say it in English, but like Cannes and the Réalisateur, which is the, yeah. But and everyone that all of my friends that have seen it were like, I love this movie, but for some reason it just didn't really, I don't know if it on the publicity front we didn't really promote it that well. I don't know what happened, but everyone that's watched it has really liked it. So
That's a great film. This is a great film as well, Renes Val. Thank you so much for your time,
thank
Sophie,
you
and
so much to you.
hope to talk to you for the next one.
Hopefully.
Pleasure. So first off, I'm sure you've gotten this question quite a bit, during your early days, but were your first instincts as an artist, as a writer, or as a director, or did both of those practices evolve with each other?
No, I guess I've always wanted to be a director, and it's very difficult to find screenplays here in Mexico. And since I wanted to be a director and I didn't have any stories, I had to start writing. So that's how it came about. And I mean, I don't know if I'm a good writer or not, but I try to write my own stuff, and I've done it since I was in college. And I had to write my short films and then my feature films. Even though I have a writing partner for my future films, it's something. I also, now that I'm at this point in my career, I really like writing my own stuff because it comes from what I want to tell and not necessarily from what someone else wants to tell. Even though I can find a story that I like and make it my own, or find something that I can connect with and think, oh, this is a story that I could have written, or that I wanted to, that I want to tell it, you know?
Yeah, what connected you to Santiago's journey? Because at the beginning, he's all about his career and he can actually go up to a dead body and take those pictures. One, you could say that's his job, but I think a lot of people would say, how are you able to do that without actually getting your senses? So most people would freak out, but he's right there. But what intrigued you about this character and following him through whatever he becomes towards the end?
Yeah, I guess something that was in the screenplay from the start was that Santiago was very like a workaholic, you could say, a work obsessive guy. And even though he hadn't these artistic ambitions that we eventually put on the screenplay and on the film, me as a filmmaker, when I make a film, I kind of put everything from my life on hold. You know, I'm like completely focused on the film I'm doing and the story and everything that has to do with it. And I kind of start, you know, just neglect other stuff. So I guess that's the main thing I kind of connected with Santiago, because he's very obsessed with doing artistic, with becoming an artist, or because he, in a sense, he's an artist at heart, but like a respected artist, you could say. And also the thing that it's very interesting to me is the fear of fatherhood he has. So I don't have kids, and you know, I always wonder, because I like my work, and I was like, can you balance the work with the kids or not? Sometimes you have to sacrifice your profession, sometimes not. But that's the thing that kind of moved me.
What I really appreciate about your film is if you wanted to, you and your DP co-writer, you could have done so many aesthetic horror tropes in this movie, but I think what makes it really scary is you make the audience member, the viewer, journey inward, as opposed to looking at all these gory images. It's more about the fear inside and the examination of self. Was that always your approach to shaping the story and leaving all of that gory, quick cutting stuff? You didn't want that here. Was that a big part of what you wanted to do?
Yeah, from the start, since the first time I read the screenplay, I mean the first version of it, I knew how I wanted to tell the story. I thought of it as a like a make a film with a sensory experience, you know, like make the audience a part of it, so make it immersive, so the audience can be, you know, in the you can empathize in a way with the character and see the movie through his point of view. So that's the way I wanted to do it. I don't know why. It was just something that from the start I said I want to do this. Also because I felt the senses, it's a very abstract concept, you know. It's very difficult to portray that on screen. Other than the character saying, I can't smell and I can't, you know, I can taste, how do you portray that with acting or with the film language, you know? So that's why I wanted to reinforce that with the kind of the direction of the film and the cinematography and the sound design and the production design.
I remember a couple of years ago, I was watching 000 and Harold Torres, his performance. I thought it was just amazing. And I've wanted to watch more of his stuff over the years. For you as a filmmaker, What does he provide? What do you see in him that makes him so special as your lead actor?
Yeah, before we started, casting the film, I hadn't met Harold. I've heard of him obviously because here in Mexico you kind of know all of the actors, but I hadn't seen like any of his work. I've seen it. I had seen him in a couple of films, but not necessarily like as a main character. But after I met him, we had like the audition process through Zoom, so it was very difficult for me to kind of get like a sense of him. But even though it was through Zoom, he had like this enormous presence, and the choices he made as an actor were very interesting, and he just had this magnetism, that drew me to him. So after I had this session, I went and saw 000. And after I saw 000, I like, my God, he's an incredible actor. What an actor. He has to be on the film. And yeah, I mean, when we started working together, I could tell that he had he's a very intense actor. So he brought this intensity to the character, and he's very committed. And he does his homework, and he has a lot of ideas and a lot of questions. And he's very, you could say, very hyperactive. So it was very interesting working with him. And I think he brought all this maybe thing, because when you're writing a character, you kind of put yourself in the character's place, but not as an actor. Actors embody these characters, and they have to feel what they're feeling, and they have to sense what they're sensing, and everything, so they can get a sense of things you might not have seen. So it's very interesting the way Harold, for example, one of the most difficult things for him was the sense of touch. We had written it differently, but then we started talking about it, and we took a creative license because, for example, he couldn't have be able to walk normally if he doesn't feel the floor, So we were like, no, how is he gonna act half of the film like this? So we kind of took that license and said, okay, I get it. Let's start it doing gradually. And that's why at the end of the film, he starts like having trouble walking. So we just moved it from the first scene where it had to be. But yeah, he brought like these ideas and this presence and this, he made the character empathetic in a way, even though he's selfish. So I think he brought humanity to that character, which was very important for us for the film.
Thank you so much for your time. Final question is right off the top of your head, can you name one of your all-time favorite films? And what is it about the film, this film that is special to you? And we're going to hopefully pick that film and recommend it to our listeners.
Well, the difficult
I
question.
saw it. Yeah.
Because
But no. Yeah.
you want it to be, because my all-time favorite film is The Big Lebowski. So I don't know if you want like a more horror-oriented film. I could say my favorite horror film is Halloween. Halloween, I really love Halloween. I saw it for the first time. It's not the scarier, because I mean, I think maybe not the best. The best horror film is for me is The Exorcist, but my favorite is Halloween because I saw it when I was a kid, and I remember watching it on TV. I'm getting really scared. And I was like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old. I was very young. And since then, I became obsessed with it. I watch it every year. Every Halloween, every October 31st, I watch Halloween again. And after, when I grew up and wanted to become a filmmaker, I became very interested in John Carpenter because he's also, I think, the best horror film director of all time. And the way he made his films with very little money, I mean, at first, with very little money, and that film especially, and how he came about to doing it and how he had only like $300,000. And it was a very simple idea and how he made it. And how very few deaths there are on the film. And you remember, I think it's like the father of the slashers. And after that film, a lot of films came about, like, for example, Friday the 13th was like a ripoff of that film, and many more. So yeah, and the soundtrack. I mean, the soundtrack is it's amazing, and John Carpenter does the soundtrack as well. And so he's a very multifaceted director and who did everything. And also from him, obviously The Thing, another
Yeah.
favorite. But Halloween is one that I like the most.
Luis, thank you so much for your time. And for fans of Disappear Completely, will they ever, for cinephiles, will they ever get to see the epilogue or maybe deleted scenes on some kind of Blu-ray or maybe down in the future, possibly, or no?
No, because we didn't shoot it.
Oh, you didn't shoot
We
it out.
placed it. I mean, it was on the shooting schedule, and we had it on the plan and everything. But we started the shooting, and we said, no, this isn't necessary. I better use the time for something else that's more important for the film. Because I always thought, if it doesn't work, I can just delete, I cut it out, and just doesn't matter. I mean, it will leave there for the deleted scenes. But no. And there's very few deleted scenes of the film. I don't know if they're worth showing. They don't add anything to the story, really. They were kind of redundant. So it's like, I mean, this is the film that's
Right.
going to be there forever. I don't know if I will ever release that. I think there's maybe one or two deleted scenes, but they don't add much.
Luis, again, thank you so much for your time. Really love your film.
Thank you very much.